Hello. So, why don't we get started? Just before I introduce myself, how many people in the room understand English? Okay, quite a few. That's good. And I'll talk slowly for the guys if they're getting translated too. My name is Richard Riley. I am a director of the technical product management team in Microsoft Corp for SharePoint. And my team kind of sits in between customers and our engineering team. So imagine us as the translators between customers and partners and bring those ideas and requirements and feedback into the engineering team who actually write the product and write specs and update and create SharePoint. So this session is titled, You've Deployed SharePoint, Now What? How many people in the room have actually deployed SharePoint? Just a quick, lots of people, great. How many people think they're actually using it all of SharePoint or getting the most value out of SharePoint? And that's why I thought I'd do this session. So it's all about a SharePoint, what we call a SharePoint journey. SharePoint's a big product, and people take different paths through the product. Not everybody does it the same way. And this session is all about basically understanding what you've got in the SharePoint product and what you can do, and how you can kind of drive end-user adoption of the things that you want to do with SharePoint. This session is not going to be technical, so I'm not going to get deep into kind of the technical guts of the product. I hope that's okay. If anybody really wants a technical session, then now will be a really good time to go find something else to do for the next 60 minutes. But it is about understanding the possibilities of SharePoint through basically examples of how we use the product at Microsoft. So I'm going to show you some kind of internal screenshots of the kind of things we do with SharePoint within Microsoft. And then also some guidance about how to get to kind of what we've got through direct customer experience that I've had talking to probably hundreds of customers over the last 5 or 6 years. So let's begin. If my mouse is going to work. Clearly it's not. So, SharePoint is a big product. For those of you that don't know, we have kind of six areas that we talk about the product in. Sites, which is essentially collaboration. Communities, which is a lot of the social capabilities in SharePoint. Content, which is ECM, Enterprise Content Management, both ECM for WCM, Web Content Management, and also Document and Records Management. Search, which is fairly self-explanatory. Insights, which is our cool name for BI, for business intelligence. And composites. And composites is about building applications on top of SharePoint, primarily without using code. So it's a big product. And my mouse is appearing not to want to play with me today. There we go. It's a big product. And as I said, people take a different path through the product when they start. From our experience over the past, since SharePoint 2003, is one of the first things people generally do, or customers generally do with the product, is start in the enterprise content management area. So they start with managing content in SharePoint, document libraries, lists, that kind of stuff, kind of the very basic capabilities of SharePoint. And some of them might overlay some taxonomy services, rights management, and some of the more detailed capabilities, but it's generally a fairly simple start. What we then see is customers kind of move through this, through the stages of then expanding into social, into search, into more detailed collab, kind of building out the workloads that they've already started with. So if you start with collab, generally you go deeper into collab. If you start with ECM, you go deeper into ECM. And generally that kind of broadening out into the other areas of SharePoint that are available. And as we kind of move through this process, we see then people kind of moving into more capabilities of SharePoint, using more of the workloads, and using more of the things that kind of cut across those workloads. So things like eForms, like workflow, like building a few composite applications here and there, which generally pushes people into this view. And this is kind of the most advanced SharePoint customer, where they're building horizontal solutions, so things on top of SharePoint that work for IT and HR, so experiences on top of the product that are horizontal, and then also vertical, so things like finance and healthcare and specific situations, people building apps and solutions on top of SharePoint for a specific industry. And then the real thing to call out on this slide is the line of business integration. Right, some of the most value you can get from SharePoint is when you start tying it together with other applications that you own. That could be database, it could be SQL, it could be Oracle, it could be a CRM system, PeopleSoft, Siebel, SAP. When you start pulling in those applications into SharePoint, it really makes the product sing. It really adds a bunch of value to the platform. So, how do you get to that fourth quadrant that I just showed you? Essentially, the words speak for themselves. Define your requirements and put SharePoint to work. There are kind of two aspects. There's the workload aspect, where you kind of dive into the workloads. And to go along with that, there's also a level of IT platform maturity, making sure that IT guys, essentially you, kind of understand the product well enough to deliver what the business needs within kind of the workloads. So that falls into three categories, really, which is making sure you're aware of what you can do, and you can do what you want to do. I'm giving you the right tools and knowledge to put a good governance plan in place and an operations plan so you can look after the product, you can manage it, back it up, restore, all that kind of stuff. And then having an idea of how you can start rationalizing applications that are maybe on different platforms today onto the SharePoint product. And that's really where we get to that BCS, you know, business connectivity services, and building composites apps on top of the product. So we're just going to walk through some of the workloads in SharePoint. And essentially what I'm going to do is give you an idea of kind of where to start with, what to think about, and then an example of how we use that workload within Microsoft. And these are things that customers have said and things that feedback that we've got over the past few years around customers that have kind of gone into collaboration in this case and done a great job with it. It's kind of, think of it as like a best practices of what customers have done in each one of the workloads. So we'll start with collab. The first thing you want to do is to make sure in any scenario really that you've got the right logical and physical architecture. So make sure you go to TechNet and you understand how to plan for a collab environment. Collab has a very different performance profile to any other workload in SharePoint. There's lots and lots of writes. That's not the case for lots of other SharePoint workloads. So make sure you understand this. Make sure you understand how to plan and size appropriately your databases. Again, there are things you can do with content DBs. We recommend that you put your collab content databases in separate databases for backup and restore, for security. There's lots of good reasons to have them in separate DBs. That you have a dedicated web app for team sites. Again, there's lots of good reasons for doing this. I'm not going to go deeply into why, but make sure you go take a look at our best practices docs on TechNet and understand the reasons why you'd want to do this and how to go do it. Again, backup and restore is something that often gets overlooked by customers. People are used to working in file shares. Right? They're used to, if they delete something, they can go find it again, or they can get IT to backup and restore it. It does get a little bit more complicated with SharePoint, because you're talking about SQL Server, and you have to have someone to go and restore the DB or understand how to get that data back. So make sure you've got site recycle bin, you've got the recycle bin within lists and libraries configured, and you understand how to use it and manage it. A well-understood governance and security model. So be sure to understand the difference between a user principle and a group and the effect that has on SharePoint. It has a big effect in different areas. And we thoroughly recommend you go down the group route and you don't try and assign thousands of different individual users to lists and libraries. It does very odd things to things like search. And then the third from the bottom bullet, decide on a model. We see customers go down different routes when they think about collab. Some go wide open, which is one way we do it at Microsoft. If I want to go create a team site, I can go create a team site. There is a governance model around that. If I don't use it for 6 months, it gets deleted. But I can go create it and start working with my colleagues without having to ask anyone for permission. At the other end, We see customers that go for a closed model, where they, if you want to start setting up a site, you have to go ask someone. There's a workflow around it. They create it for you and they set you up, and then you start collaborating. And then there's somewhere in the middle where some people get to do it, some people don't. An understanding kind of where your corporate culture and what you want to achieve falls into this model is really, really important to understand then how you plan and how you implement it. Secondly, decide on a strategy for the migration of file shares. This is one thing that I've seen lots of customers fail miserably with, where they basically try to pick up a home drive and drop it into SharePoint. And it rarely works. It rarely works. So understand why you're moving content from a file share. Understand what content you're moving. Things like access databases don't really work very well in SharePoint when you've got multiple people accessing them. There are considerations you want to understand before you basically pick a file share up and drop it into SharePoint. It also is a great time and an opportunity to tidy up that data. Don't just pick it all up. Understand whether it's still relevant or not, and then just move the stuff that is relevant into SharePoint. And then finally, understand and plan for Office client deployment. SharePoint and Office client are tied very closely. Be sure to understand the difference of experience you'll get if you run Office 2003 against SharePoint 2010. There is a difference. There's a difference between 2003, 2007, and 2010. So be clear on that. If you can't update the desktop, that's cool, but just understand the difference of experience you'll get with the different Office clients. And then think about, this is going to get me the whole way through. I think about creating custom site templates and features. We do this to some extent within Microsoft, where we have a task-based approach to collab. So not only can you create a team site, but you could create, you know, a product planning site, or you can create a press release site. And those sites are configured and set up to do the task that you're trying to do. So you don't just land in a blank SharePoint site, you know, with a little picture in the corner and welcome to your site. You actually land in something that makes sense. This actually drives a ton of adoption from people because they can do something immediately. They don't have to go and figure out where they've just landed. Theming and branding, it makes a huge difference, believe it or not, to make the site look pretty and, you know, make it match your corporate branding. Deploying Office web apps. Who in the room has deployed web apps for SharePoint 2010? Hardly anyone. And they're actually really easy to deploy, and they're really powerful. Like, there's been a couple of times when I open a doc and I forget I'm in the Word web app. Like, it just looks right, it works. So think about deploying the Word web apps. There's a ton of value in the Office web apps. Think about SharePoint Workspace. There's offline. Lots of customers get a whole heap of benefit from SharePoint Workspace. And then kind of SharePoint Designer, it's a kind of a taboo word, really, with IT guys. Lots of people don't like SharePoint Designer because it can break things. We've done a lot of work in SharePoint 2010 to make SharePoint Designer safer. So go take another look at it. It puts a lot of power in the hands of users when they can do stuff through SharePoint Designer. And education really is key to that. And then finally, IRM is also something that once deployed gets used much, much more than you probably think it would. So what does this look like in Microsoft? You're not going to be able to read this. I'll walk you through it. We've actually changed the way when you go and create a self-service site to make it much easier for IT to provision and manage that site in the more relevant way. So for example, in the top, that says audience reach, and it says audience scope, and then you've got enterprise collaboration, SMSG, workplace, organization, team, or project. That gives IT the knowledge they need to go create that site in a specific content DB, or apply specific policy to it, or set it up in a certain way right from the start. We also have the intended use, so is it a portal for communication, an application or business solution, or collaboration? Again, it gives IT the knowledge they need to go do something smart with it when that site is created. It also gives us a chance to mark the information security classification, say, is this business critical data? Is it going to matter if it leaks? And again, IT can apply the right policy and do the right things based on the classification of the data that's in the site. And then we have at the bottom some other bits and pieces. That basically there's an end user license agreement to tell people what they're about to do and telling you when the expiration of that site is going to occur. And then once that's created, you can see at the top, we get the nice MBI, which basically tells me that that is not mission critical business information. So I can then have a very visual cue about what kind of data I should be storing in that collaboration site. And if we move on to another example, this is a site called Campus within SharePoint. This is where all of our services people, so MCS, go to track the projects that they're involved with. And this is actually a really good example of an open way of collaborating, but doing it in a controlled way. So you can see we've got things like create an engagement site, create a team site, or create a community site. And these are templates that have been specifically set up for MCS to work with based on the activity that they're doing at the time. And there's a bunch of other stuff in here, but it basically gives MCS a center of gravity for the work that they're doing and a very prescriptive way to go create and collaborate on sites that essentially map to projects, customers, engagements, and the things that MCS do. So how do you drive adoption for collaboration? The first one is understanding business requirements. If you don't understand that, you're kind of dead in the water before you've even started. You have to understand what your users want to do before you start doing something. So clearly understood requirements equals adoption. From all of the customers that I've seen that have deployed Collab in any serious way, when they use the self-service site provisioning is the time that they are most successful. If you try and put kind of boundaries and speed bumps in front of Collab, it tends to kind of break the model a little bit. Establishing a SharePoint resource center for users. This is something that, again, kind of gets ignored a little bit, but giving people a place to go to learn is key. Like, you can't just throw this thing at them and expect them to understand how to immediately use it and get the most out of it. So create a resource center, create a community around SharePoint, create some community champions that in each business unit that use SharePoint, they understand how to use it, but they are power users essentially, and nurture those people and make sure they get the exposure that they deserve for being your champs, and then get users engaged outside of the technology. Again, this is something, it's only a small thing, but it's something that we've seen really drive a positive adoption of SharePoint, is having users involved in silly things like the name of the intranet or the best design or branding option for SharePoint really gets people involved in the product and helps them feel engaged. So there's not really a lot of rocket science there, but they all really are important things to driving the right behaviors for users. So let's move on to ECM, to Enterprise Content Management. Again, getting end users and business buy-in is key for ECM. This is probably the most hard thing to implement in any organization, second to something like project management, I would say. If the business doesn't understand the value and the users don't understand why you're asking them to tag documents and store stuff in a specific place, you don't stand a chance of doing anything significant in ECM. And the way that we've seen people be most successful is to plan for scale and capacity. So plan for the biggest amount of data that they think they're going to get, but start small. So don't try and layer this across all of your business units or all of your organization in one go. Take your time, pick some areas that you know you can win, and start with those. And then other things that customers do in this area would be things like defining and configuring the enterprise metadata services. That's kind of a key first thing that most people do. Configuring content policies and content types is second, and then finally configuring search, because once you get any significant amount of data in a records library or a document center, you're going to need search to kind of filter through that content. And then think about migrating existing content. And again, I'll go back to the file share thing. Don't drag and drop it. Like, this is a time you can take to look at the content you've got and migrate it sensibly. You might want to add metadata to that content as you move it into SharePoint. You might want to delete some of that content. So take your time and understand why you're moving content into SharePoint before you just kind of just blindly throw it all in. Enabling the content organizer. Who's ever heard of the content organizer in the room? So this is actually a really cool new thing in SharePoint 2010 where you can have SharePoint move your content and put it into a specific place automatically based on things like the metadata that's applied to that content. So if you've never played with a content organizer, you should definitely go take a look at it. You can also force Office client to only save to a specific location. The content organizer can pick it up and then it can place it into the right place within SharePoint automatically for you. So take a look at the content organizer if you've never seen it before. And then things like building a custom ECM front end. And what this means is if you've got a document repository with millions of items in it, you're not going to use our UI to go and browse around a million items in a library because it'll be page one of 15,000 or million or whatever. Lots of customers we've seen that run ECM at scale will build their own front end. So they'll build their own browsing capabilities, they'll build their own search, they'll build an experience around all of that data that makes sense for the data. And I'll show you what we do with that within Microsoft in a second. And then finally, e-discovery is something that customers don't necessarily fall into straight away, but once they see the value in the rest of the ECM investments in SharePoint, they generally migrate towards. So let me show you what we do at Microsoft, an example for ECM at Microsoft. This is a site called Infopedia. This is clearly built on Microsoft, and this is what we use across the company to share documents, final documents. It's not a collaboration site. It's when we finished creating something, we would publish it to Infopedia. All of the product groups, this one is just a topic page from SharePoint, get their own site and their own pages that they look after. The templates are all the same. And in this case, this is just a topic page for SharePoint 2010 end user readiness content. And you can see at the top, you get the option that it's a publishing page, so you've got the option there to publish the page or unpublish it and change it and make edits. We leverage search extensively with Infopedia. So we have fast search running this. So if I want to find a document, I can type it in. It'll take me directly to the topic page where that document set is located. We also allow anybody at the company to go and suggest a change for the page. So if you land on a topic page and you think that it's missing something or it's factually incorrect, you can actually go and edit the page. Your edit won't show until the topic owner approves it, so we have approval set on the pages, but you can go and change it, and this adds that community experience to the site. And then you can see on the right hand side we've got a great link to the topic owner. We use some of their recommendation or their voting and the rating capabilities in SharePoint, plus down at the bottom the page tags, which I'll show you in a second. So it's a really it's a very natural experience, and it's very simple for people to go and find content within Infopedia, basically using search as the starting point. Now, if I want to add a document to Infopedia, I create a new document set, and basically I just say add a new document, and you can see we have a whole heap, lots of metadata that we allow you to add. Now, this metadata is great because the first thing is it lets you find the content a lot more quickly. The second thing is it allows IT to manage the content a lot more effectively. And the third thing is content in Infopedia gets federated to lots of other sites within Microsoft. So if I wanted some, if I had a lot of, say, SharePoint ECM content that I uploaded to Infopedia, I could tag it, and then other sites within Microsoft can automatically show that the content that matched those tags in different places. So it means the content gets wings. It can appear in lots of different places, but it lives in Infopedia. It's stored and managed in Infopedia. And then finally, this is my page in Infopedia that shows me all of the documents that I've uploaded. Let me try and get this thing to work. We built some management tools around it, so you can see we've got published documents. We can batch tag documents, we can find a document, and we can manage delegates. So it allows me to manage my content within Wikipedia. And then we have another set of controls, which shows me things like my expiring content, any recent changes to the documents that I've got in Infopedia, and a changelog. So we've built a really rich ECM experience with a very different UI than you would see with SharePoint out of the box. And it works really well. It works really well. So let's move on to social. How many people in the room have some kind of social network or social computing infrastructure deployed in their org? A few people. How many people use SharePoint for it? Okay, so hopefully what I'm about to show you will give you some confidence that you really can use SharePoint for your social platform within, like your enterprise social platform within your organizations. So the first one is getting executive level sponsorship for the project. This is kind of a no-brainer, right? You have to do this. It's one of those things that your execs will either love or they'll hate. And if they hate it, you don't want to be the person doing it without them knowing about it first. So it definitely is a prerequisite. Secondly, be clear about your goals and success criteria, like why are you deploying a social platform? And when I ask customers that, more often than not, they don't really know. They just know they need to do it, or they know they want to do it. So understand like what value, what are you going to drive to your bottom line by deploying social capabilities into your enterprise? There's always a reason. And figure out what that is and be very crisp and very clear about what it is. Again, the correct logical and physical architecture are key. The user profile service, hands up who's deployed user profile. Hands up who actually enjoyed it. You enjoyed it? User profile service is, read about it before you start trying to deploy it. It's not the most straightforward thing to do. You should properly understand the twists and turns you may take by getting UPS working properly. So definitely do your homework on UPS. And not just the technical side of things, also make sure that you understand what data you're syncing into SharePoint. Getting good profile data from the beginning into SharePoint is kind of key to people using it, because if they see lots of empty fields they have to go fill in, generally people are going to, they've got more important things to do, they'll go do something else. So if you can get good data from lots of different sources, not just Active Directory, but if you've got an HR site, if you've got data anywhere else that you can pull and aggregate into users' profiles, then I definitely recommend spending time making sure that you think that through before you do it. And then configure people search. People search is one of the kind of hidden gems in SharePoint. If you've never really used it properly, the first time you use it and you find someone in a completely different side of your organization that can help you, it really kind of is a light bulb moment when you realize how powerful people search driven by the profile data in people's My Sites really is. And then finally, educate your users, and that kind of goes without saying. Think about with social, customizing the branding, and I'll show you what we've done at Microsoft in a second. It makes a big difference. I'll be the first to say the branding of the My Site out of the box in SharePoint 2010 is not very nice. You will want to spend some time making it look good, for sure. Building and buying new capabilities. There's lots of things you can do with SharePoint to, especially the social side of things, to enhance that social experience. And you can build them, or you can go out and find a partner and buy them. Customizing the blog and wiki experience. Again, giving people a nice template to host their blog in makes all the difference. It makes people want to go back and do it. Again, the out-of-the-box template is not great for what we provide out of the box. The Outlook Social Connector. Who's heard of the Outlook Social Connector? A few people. So again, this is a great way to pull in not only SharePoint activity feed data into Outlook, but also pictures and Facebook, LinkedIn, and a bunch of other things into Outlook, which is essentially where most people live. and make that connection with SharePoint. And then finally, deploying the link for integrated presence and messaging. Those little green dots and red dots that you see on SharePoint when you've got a link installed really drive the connectivity between people. It's a great way to, especially when you've got a people search experience set up correctly, you can go and search for a topic or a skill or something else, find a person within 3 clicks, you're on the phone to them or you're instant messaging with them. It really kind of completes that scenario when you've got link enabled for presence and IM. So let me show you what this looks like in Microsoft. This is my site. So you first thing you notice is it looks nothing like the regular My Site that we provide out of the box. I'll just walk you through some of the things we've done to my site at the top. The first one is you can see we've got the standard status update. That's fairly regular on my site, but we've made it look different. Second, as you see, we've got presence enabled. So I've got the little green dot. So anybody coming to my site could click on that. They'll get the contact card, and they can email me, call me, IM me directly from there. The third one is we've got a link off to not just my content, but you'll see at the bottom we've got things like my SharePoint sites. So I can click on that link and it will take me to a page that's got all of the sites within our SharePoint infrastructure that I have contributor rights to. We have find people right within the page. So I could type Mikhail's name in to the box on the top right, and that's actually dropped down, and I could click that link and go straight through to her my site as well. So making it really easy to make the connections between people. And this is all standard SharePoint capabilities. We've just made it look different. Thirdly, this is something we actually built. That says 100%. And this is essentially telling me that I've missed my profile completion. So I basically filled in all of the parts of my profile, and that's telling me that I'm 100% complete. It's the same sort of thing that people like LinkedIn do. We have my free busy information up there. We have some pictures from a picture library that I've got in my site. We have my attributes, my profile information on the right-hand side. We have a nice UI that allows me to see things like an activity feed, the people that I'm following, groups and projects that I'm involved with, my blog, some videos and tags, and then finally we've got my activity feed down the bottom. So we've done a lot of work to make this look very different. And I'll tell you, the difference just in the UI has driven adoption within Microsoft. Just making it not look like SharePoint has been a big driver for people to use my sites. So let's move on to the next screenshot, which is basically the Outlook Social Connector. So for those of you that haven't seen it, this just plugs into Outlook. It adds a pane at the bottom. I've made it extra big in this case. It allows you to connect your contacts to Facebook, LinkedIn, and SharePoint. So you can see things like activity updates that they've made. You can see recent emails. You can see attachments and a bunch of other things based on the contacts that you've got. So if you've not played with the Outlook Social Connector, I'd also recommend you go take a look at that. And then finally, this is a site that we called Academy. Now, this is a podcasting site, and it's used, again, across Microsoft to share to share videos. We have salespeople creating sales videos. The product groups create technical videos. We just have a ton of user-created training on the Academy site. And again, this is all built on top of SharePoint, all driven by search. So if you want to find a podcast or a video on a specific topic, you can type in the topic in the search box, and it's going to pull up a set of results. We have the ability for end users to upload their own podcasts. So you can create a video, upload it, and it will appear in the list for anybody else to watch. And then we've got the content area on the page there, which allows you to go and kind of browse what's new, the most popular, and the upcoming events. So again, just some ideas for what you can do on top of the platform itself. This started as a side project with just a couple of people working on it. It's turned into something that has been adopted across the company. You would be amazed at how popular and how much use Academy gets these days. Essentially, whenever we need to get anything out to the field, we will create an Academy. Like, we'll create an Academy live session, we'll upload it, and we know that anybody within Microsoft can go look at it and watch that content. So how do you improve user adoption in social? One of the biggest ways here is for you to use it yourself. Like, use it, share it, send people links to your My Site. That raises visibility of what you're doing and the social capabilities. The other thing is to prove the value, like show people that they can get value from using the social capabilities in SharePoint. That could be anecdotal feedback, it could be research, it could be studies that you run, but whatever it is, make sure people know the value that they can get from the social capabilities in SharePoint. And then my second from the bottom is an important one, like seed it. Make sure that when you deploy tagging and you deploy metadata that you actually seed the tag corpus with tags, that it's not just an empty box that people type into. So you can kind of pre-populate a lot of this content in there, so it's kind of there waiting for users. So let's move on to intranet and internet. Where do you start? Actually, how many people in the room run their intranet on SharePoint? Lots. That makes a lot of sense. Start with a reason for people to visit. This is the biggest thing that I've seen customers kind of fall flat on their face with, is that they may have two or three different intranets that serve different purposes, and they try to kind of consolidate it on SharePoint, and they just end up with a mess. They end up with something that doesn't really serve a real purpose. So understand why you're doing it, like plan why you're doing it. Understand what the business requirements are of why you're actually putting an intranet together. And then secondly, spend some time on branding. Like, if your site looks kind of rubbish, people generally don't want to spend a lot of time there. And again, we come back to planning the correct logical and physical architecture for what you're trying to do. There are lots of things with when you get to WCM, Web Content Management, that will make your life easier. Things like caching, things like content deployment. If you're going to use multilingual and variations, make sure you plan for them up ahead, because they're kind of difficult to reverse engineer into the process afterwards. And then if you're talking about putting an internet site out, make sure you follow the guidance around security hardening for SharePoint. There are some things that you'll want to do and some things that you won't want to do with regards to security. And then think about adding interactivity to your site. So it's not just a static site. Think about building some controls or buying some controls that add some interactivity to the site. Use an enterprise search as the hook. I know at SharePoint we have an intranet site called MSW. I basically go there to search. I land on that site and I hit the search box more often than I'll take a look or go there to take a look at the content. But whilst I'm there, typing in my search control, I'll take a look at the rest of the page and I'll usually find out something that I didn't know, or I'll read the news as I'm thinking about other stuff. So enterprise search as the hook for internet site is a key one. Editorial team to make sure the content is updated. That kind of goes without saying. And then be a good neighbor, like acknowledge, support, and federate across your other sites within your organization. Your intranet site doesn't have to be the kind of be-all and end-all, the single place that you have this content. So understand how you can federate that content out to other sites. So I'll take a quick look at what we do at Microsoft. This is MSW. This is our corporate intranet site. You can see, well, you probably can't see at the top there, but we have a very clear navigation along the top, kind of task-based of what you're looking for. We have very clear navigation down the side. Again, be clear about what you're trying to do with the content. This, I would say, maps and directions content on our site is probably the most looked at piece of content on MSW. It basically shows you where all the buildings are on the campus in Redmond. And I have to look at this every time I need to go to a different building. We have a content by query web part that's just pushing a bunch of news up onto the site, and then excuse me, a nice Silverlight control at the top that's pulling news in from an editorial that's been editorially created. And again, it looks, you know, it looks nice. It looks good. Now, what about internet? We obviously run our SharePoint product marketing site on SharePoint. So this is sharepoint.microsoft.com. We have at the top, you'll see I'm actually logged in with my email address. We edit our own marketing site, so we can just go click the page into edit mode and edit the page, and I'll show you that in a second. We also have, I think, around 26 different variations of this site based on locale. So this is obviously flipped to Russian. We have a nice big Silverlight control that spins the news around along the top, a content by query web part that pushes up the most recent news, and then some content editor web parts that are showing directly typed in content into the page. Now, if we flip this into edit mode, you can see, obviously, we get the regular SharePoint ribbon along the top. But the key here is the value that we get from this is we allow each of our subsidiaries to manage and edit their content themselves. So we didn't do, for the Russian site, we don't do any of this. Yet it's all built on the same infrastructure. We give them the login, they can go login, they can set the they can set their own content up. The pictures and the navigation and the information you see scrolling through the Silverlight control in the middle is all driven through lists. So they basically upload the image, they put the text in, and it appears in the Silverlight control. It's all very self-service driven. And it works really, really well because we don't need to manage this stuff. We let the subsidiaries manage the content that lands on SharePoint.microsoft.com. And obviously, they can also localize the content, which we'd probably do a bad job of going from English to Russian. So the final one I want to show you around web content management is the SharePoint conference site. Again, this is a site that is built completely on SharePoint, even to the point of the whole conference is run off a solution on top of SharePoint. So when you go to the SharePoint conference site and you browse for a session, you submit feedback, you look at the social capabilities, all of those features are built on SharePoint. So you can see this is kind of the back end of that experience. You can see we've got tracks, sessions, themes, rooms, shirt sizes, all of the stuff that we need to run that event is run through SharePoint, lists and libraries, workflow. When we have a speaker that needs to go register, all of that registration is done through SharePoint and the information is stored in a list. All of the rooms that we have at the conference, they're all stored in a list and then we allocate sessions to rooms. So we built a very, very complex, essentially event management solution on top of SharePoint to run our own conference. So then when you take a look at the conference site itself, you can see we've integrated with LiveID, so I can log in with my Hotmail address. And then the content you see within the red box here, this is all just basically driven from a SharePoint list. So we've got no custom components on this page. It's all driven through customization of the UI and content being pulled back from a SharePoint list. So it's just actually a really good example of using web content management and the lists and libraries and the core features of SharePoint to create a very rich solution on top of the product. So let's move on to composites. Who actually understands what a composite is? Nobody. We should have done a better job kind of explaining what composites are. Essentially, they are applications on top of SharePoint that you don't need Visual Studio to create. That's the easiest way to put them. So it's tying together things like InfoPath, Access, Visio Services, Workflow, a BCS connection that's been already created for you, using the browser, so you're customizing the UI or capabilities through the browser, or using SharePoint Designer, or a combination of the both. And once you've got those things together, you can call it a composite. It's an app made up of composite parts. If you're thinking about kind of going down this route, One of the best ways to do it is to start with an IT app. So something like hardware procurement, IT service status, something like that. It will give you a chance to kind of understand the capabilities and build something yourself instead of kind of going building it out for a business unit or a customer. When it's the first time that you're doing it. And then finally, as you go through this process of kind of building a few of these composite apps, start thinking about the other applications you've got running in your organization. These could be Access apps, it could be ASP.NET apps, it could be apps running on LAMP, it could be lots of different types of business apps that you've got running across your organization, and think about how you could move them onto SharePoint. Because once you get everything on SharePoint, it actually becomes a lot easier for you to manage control and all the rest of the good things that come with SharePoint. You end up with a single infrastructure for all of these applications across across your organization. And think about empowering end users to build their own composites. Like, once you've got the hang of it, it's not very difficult to kind of educate your most advanced users to get them building their own composite apps for themselves. And this really starts to take pressure off IT, because you're not the one responsible for building all of the apps that your end users want. They can actually go do it themselves in a very controlled way. So think about how you can empower your end users to build their own composites. BCS is kind of a key component to this. So if you've got data that is useful to users, if I think of Microsoft, we have lots of sales data. We expose that through a BCS connection, and it means anybody can go build a sales tracking app or a BI dashboard or something in Excel services, leveraging that sales data that we've got in SQL. So once you start bubbling up that data access to the end user level for people that understand how to use it, it opens up a whole new raft of opportunities for people to kind of build applications on top of it. So let me take a quick look of what we've done in Microsoft with composites. Believe it or not, this was built by one of our administrators. She's like a group admin. She's not a SharePoint expert by any stretch of the imagination. But she put together an InfoPath form plus a simple workflow that whenever we want to go buy anything, whether it's a new computer, whether it's some more memory or a mouse or whatever else it is, we fill in this form, we hit submit, it lands in her inbox, it goes through a workflow, she orders it for us. And then what we did to help her is we tied together our procurement app through BCS into this. So she puts the PO number in there, and from that point onwards, it's an automatic process. When the thing is shipped, we get an email telling it's been shipped. When it's arrived, we get another email. And then when it's in her office and delivered, we get another email to say it's there. And this probably took her, a couple of days, and it took us a couple of hours to sort out the BCS part of it. It saved her probably 5 or 6 hours a week. She was constantly checking on stuff for people. She was constantly processing stuff for people. It's dead simple to do. It's really, really simple. InfoPath workflow is InfoPath and workflow is a great combination. So let's just go back. So improvement adoption with composites, I've probably talked about this already. Educate, empower, and evangelize. Like, educate people on the capabilities that they've got and that they can use to build composites. Help them understand how to use them. And then, go tell people about it. Tell people, show people the order procurement form and how simple it was. And I guarantee you'll have lots more people wanting to build the same stuff. So let's move on to search. I think this is the last one. Who has Fast deployed in their organization? Many people? A couple of folks. So plan the topology and capacity. Like, search is the most complex workload to deploy. There are lots of different roles. There's a crawlers, there's indexers, there's a bunch of different roles within search to understand before you even get to the point of installing the product. So make sure you understand how to deploy and install search before you start. understand your users too. Again, a lot of this comes back to understanding what people want from the product rather than you just thinking what they want. Understand what they want. You'll need their input for defining things like synonyms and best bets and that kind of stuff. So make sure you understand your user base. And again, customizing the search experience, not only the UI, but also the way that you control manage properties, scopes, and best bets makes a huge difference to the value that people get out of search. And then finally, monitor and refine relevance and content sources. If you're not indexing the right stuff, people won't be able to find the right stuff. And you can get a lot of this information out of things like the crawl logs and the query logs. So some things to think about with search. Customizing and extending the search UI. I'll show you what we've done in Microsoft in a second with regards to customizers in the search UI. But it makes a big difference, and it can either work for you or against you. So you need to be very careful and kind of very precise in how you customize the search UI. Indexing line of business data is another key thing that lots of people overlook. BCS makes it really easy to index things like customers or products or projects, and then show that data in a dashboard. It's actually really easy to do. We do this at Microsoft, where if I'm looking for a customer name, I can type in the customer name to search, and I'll get back a list. I'll get back the account management team, the key contact to the customer, their location, their contact details, their most recent sales information, lots of stuff just basically by putting in the customer name and hitting the search button. I would have had to go to like 5 or 6 different places in the past to go find out. So you can add a lot of value by taking a look at your LOB data and putting it into the context of search. Building search-driven applications is another one. Creating unique experiences that the user doesn't even know they're using search. The best example for this that I've got is if you go to BestBuy.com, it's a US electronics retailer, pretty much their whole site is driven by FAST. You would never know it. Like their product view, when you purchase stuff, recommendations, all that stuff is driven through FAST. So think about inventive, creative ways that you can actually use search to drive an experience, not just 10 blue links on a page, but an experience and a something outside of the core search capabilities. And then finally, making a plan for relevancy. Like, you can never stop improving relevancy. Understanding whether people are finding the right content is key to getting value out of search and particularly out of FAST. So let me just pop down to the screenshot. So this is a search for SharePoint on MSW using Fast Search. You see we have a bunch of refiners on the left-hand side, so I can refine my results by author, by modified date, by site, by results type, by lots of other different metadata to try and find what I'm looking for. We have a great set of editorially defined best bets for SharePoint, so that someone's created these in IT as the best results for SharePoint. We have some great integration with things like PowerPoint previews when you've got FAST installed, so I can very quickly see from a search result whether it's the right thing that I'm looking for, the right PowerPoint in this case. We have related searches and glossaries, so like a definition of what SharePoint is, and plus searches that might be useful to me. People matches, so I can actually see who has SharePoint in their profile information. And then federated results from MSDN and TechNet that show me some context from a search for SharePoint basically on the internet that pulls back from MSDN and TechNet. And then this is another example. This is kind of a search-driven application where Microsoft creates over the course of a year thousands of presentations, events like this, customer events. We're in a never-ending cycle of event after event. They all land in a file share called ShowsOS. And up until last year, if you wanted to find a specific PowerPoint, you had to go hunting through a folder structure in ShowsOS to find the year, the conference, the session, and then double-click and open it and make sure it was the right one. Instead of doing that, we put search in front of it. We basically just indexed all of the PowerPoints in that file share. We used FAST. This is pretty much out of the box. But the value we get out of this is phenomenal. because I can just go in and search for a specific presentation or a specific topic, and I just get all of the PowerPoints back from all of the events that we've run worldwide that have those keywords or those concepts in. And it saves hours. When you put in decks together or you're trying to find something, this site is phenomenal for just cutting down the amount of time it takes for you to find that content. So it's kind of a good example of a search-driven app, even though it's pretty much standard stuff out of the box. It's just a very scoped search experience. So, in summary, using more workloads and going deeper in existing workloads kind of represents a key milestone for SharePoint deployments. Don't get stuck in the single workload that you're in. Understand your business requirements and what you can do with SharePoint past kind of where you started. So if you started in search or ECM or collab, kind of broaden your view and take a look at what's out there, because there is a whole heap of value in SharePoint that I guarantee you're not using. We don't use it to full effect within Microsoft for sure. So there's an awful lot there. So understand what is there. End user adoption is key. Don't underestimate the power of your end users. If you don't create something that they're going to want to use, then they won't use it, and you won't be getting the right, you know, the right level of value back from the product that you've invested in. And continue improving on the user experience and business functionality on a regular basis. There's always more you can do. We're constantly doing more with SharePoint within Microsoft, so don't think you're ever finished. It's a really, really big, deep, and broad product. So keep going at it. Keep looking at what other people are doing, and you know, keep improving on what you do within your own organization. And that is me done. I hope that was useful to you to kind of give you some ideas of what you can do with SharePoint. I am happy to take questions now, or I'll be at the Ask the Experts thing, the booth later on today. So thank you very much for listening.